Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
Season 1, Episode 6 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by Redcon 1, Old School Labs, Florida Alternative Medicine, and Six Pack Bags. All right, welcome everybody to episode number 6 of season 1 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We are talking about the 40th anniversary of the movie Pumping Iron. That iconic classic bodybuilding film is still on everybody's favorite list. And today we have one of the primary people in that movie. His name is Mike Katz. And, of course, Mike was featured in the beginning of the movie Pumping Iron, and Mike was getting ready to compete in the 1975 Mr. Universe contest against his rival, Ken Waller. And that was pretty much, I think, the first third of the movie Pumping Iron. And it was a very important part of the movie because I think Mike presented sort of an everyman type of perspective to the general public because he was someone who was made fun of as a kid. And he started lifting weights and getting big because he wanted to show everybody that he was something. He was going to make something of himself. And he didn't have the genetics of a Lou Ferrigno or an Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it took Mike quite a while to win the top titles. And he talks about that in the movie, how he wasn't going to stop until he made it. So he was a big part of that movie for sure. Definitely one of the stars of the movie. And Mike was also featured in the book Pumping Iron. If you heard my interview with Charles Gaines last week, Charles talked about traveling to Baghdad, Iraq with George Butler, the photographer of the book, and then later the director of the movie. And they went in 1972, they traveled to Baghdad, Iraq to cover the 1972 Mr. Universe. And Mike Katz and Ed Corney were the American bodybuilders who were competing in the show that year. And Ed Corney won the overall. Really, that was one of the greatest parts of the book, Pumping Iron, was where they went to Baghdad and they showed how popular the sport was out there. And they really liked Mike. That's where they got to meet him. And I think that's why they put him in the movie so prominently. So we've got a great interview with Mike where he's going to talk about all the things that went into making the movie and also the book. And if you follow my Bodybuilding Legends interviews on bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, under the video section, we have all the video interviews there. Mike was actually one of the first bodybuilders I interviewed for the Bodybuilding Legends show. And I think he was the third guy I interviewed, and I interviewed him at the beginning of 2015. So I was really happy that Mike was able to come back and talk to us about his experiences with the movie Pumping Iron. All right, as I mentioned, we are brought to you by Redcon 1, and everyone who wants to be a champion, everybody wants to be the best. But at Redcon 1, they believe in working hard and achieving your goals. Whether it's to kill it in the gym or run a six-minute mile, Redcon 1 has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout, which is called Total War, and it is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after your workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE from Redcon 1. It's the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs. And the carbs come from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. It's the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best sports nutrition has to offer. They also are offering a discount code, LEGENDS, as a favor to the show, and you'll get 15% discount off your order. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. Old School Labs makes uncompromisingly premium supplements, and they draw on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with, and it's the brand that I personally use to win many competitions, including the 2012 Natural Universe in the Masters Division. So Old School Labs is going to give you 12% off your purchase. Just go to oldschoollabs.com. and use the code LEGEND12 at the checkout. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and as I promised you last week, part one of the Dorian Yates interview, which will also be a video interview that will be on bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, that is almost completed. It should be up this week, sometime this week, right after you hear this broadcast. So check that out on my YouTube channel or on bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. I also got some good news. I went to the Tampa Pro Show this weekend out in Tampa, which is a huge two-day show. They feature all the professional events, everything from men's bodybuilding, fitness, figure, bikini, men's physique, classic physique, women's bodybuilding, women's physique, everything. I don't know if I'm forgetting them all, but they had all of them, and they did it on a two-day show. They did it Friday and Saturday. And Tim Gardner, who is a friend of mine, he is one of the premier IFBB promoters in the country or in the world. I think he does like 12 events now. And this is his baby, the Tampa Pro Show. This was his 10th year doing it because he started, I think, in 2008. So congratulations to Tim on such a huge show. It gets bigger and bigger every year. He also does an amateur division called the Tim Gardner Extravaganza, which was held on Saturday night. I think he had over, 300 MPC amateur competitors. So it's really, really a huge event. But at the show, I got to meet Mike Ashley, who was one of the top pro bodybuilders in the 1980s and 1990s. And I got to finally talk to Mike. We've been playing email tag or phone tag. And so finally I got to talk to him. And so he promised that he is also going to be on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com interviews. So I look forward to talking to Mike because he was really a top bodybuilder during his period. And like I said, in the late 80s and early 90s, I believe he won the IFBB Mr. Universe in 1986 and did very, very well in his first year as a pro in 1987. And Mike was the natural guy. He was, before natural bodybuilding got big, Mike said that he was a natural bodybuilder and he never took steroids. So should be really interesting to talk to him. So we got that coming up on the website pretty soon. All right, we're also brought to you by Six Pack Bags. And Six Pack Bags creates premium iconic meal management bags, which allow you to pack all your meals and carry them with you. They also have healthy, competitor-friendly hot sauces and accessories geared toward everyone, from bodybuilders, CrossFit athletes, or fitness enthusiasts. Anyone who prepares their own meals and needs to take those meals with them needs a six-pack bag. So you can focus on your fitness goals, training hard, and eat right all the time. So check out the different options at sixpackbags.com and use the discount code LEGENDS10 to receive 10% off your total purchase. We're also brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. As you know, as we get older, sometimes our hormone levels go down and we may not even realize. So if you're not feeling at your best, then check out Florida Alternative Medicine and they will give you a screening and you'll be able to see where you're at. And then their certified and knowledgeable staff will help work with you to achieve your goals and then help you get the results that you've been looking for. They have a wide range of services that ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but you're also be comfortable knowing that they are there for you every step of the way. And they also offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So give them a call for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart. You can also use the promotion code LEGEND for a free consultation and you get 20% off your packages. So to contact them, go to their website at opeshealth.org, that's opeshealth.org, or you can actually call their office at 813-906-6737, and they are located in Tampa, Florida, but you do not have to be in the Florida area to talk to them because they will work with anyone from around the country. All right, so that is it for our opening. We are ready now for our interview with Mike Katz talking about the movie Pumping Iron. Here you go. All right, joining us on the line today for our podcast is Mike Katz. Mike, of course, was featured in both the book and the movie Pumping Iron. Mike joined us for an interview a couple of years ago, and I appreciate that. So I appreciate you coming back to talk to us about the 40th anniversary of Pumping Iron.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. Look forward to this interview.
Yeah, you were a great interview a couple of years ago, Mike. We talked about your whole career. But you are one of the unique individuals who was featured in both the book and the movie, and you were around during that great time in bodybuilding. Can you believe it's been 40 years already, Mike?
I sort of don't want to think about that. you know, it seems like it was yesterday, to be honest with
yeah.
you. So it's been relatively a good 40 years. I've had a few hiccups, but, you know, there isn't anybody that in the last 40 years that hasn't had some issues,
right.
but I'm still here and very fortunate to know still who I am.
Well, it's funny. I was looking on, I was on Facebook today, and I saw it was your son, his anniversary, his wedding anniversary. And of course, or I can't recall watching the movie Pumping Iron where you're playing with him and showing him how to pose, and your son and your daughter. So it's wild now that he's so grown up and he's married and he's been married for so many years.
Yes, I know. He's doing very well. I'm very proud of him and my daughter. My daughter is a hospice nurse, and my son runs five of our five Planet Fitnesses, and we just bought one of the most popular pizza places in Connecticut, and we just, he's starting with a pizza truck business with catering, so we've moved from getting people in shape with the gym to getting a bit out of shape with the pizza business, but obviously back in shape again, so it's kind of like a ping-pong match.
Yeah, you could tie them all together. Well, Mike, let's talk about the first time you met Charles Gaines and George Butler, and I think that was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was in 1972, right, at the Mr. East Coast contest, the one that was run by Ed Jubenville?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It sounds like the year would be correct. I can't remember when the book came out, but obviously if the book would have had to have come out past 72, I'm not exactly sure of the date.
Yeah, the book came out in 74.
Yeah, so that would have been the first connection that we had when these two fellows that from a bodybuilding standpoint were relatively unknown, not even relatively, they were completely unknown because they weren't bodybuilding people. They were a photographer and a writer. So that was an interesting, you know, in those days we were, you know, and even today I'm happy to give this interview, and I still feel, I know Lee Haney is, you know, another one who I probably have the most respect for. You know, Arnold as well, but it would be difficult to get a hold of Arnold. If you asked Lee Haney to do what I'm doing, you know, he would bend over backwards and feel honored to do it just like me. Arnold's life is, you know, it's more complicated, and I can understand why he can't fill every request, but I know a guy like Haney would, and I know I would, so we're both honored to still have personalities that enjoy coming in contact with our fans, both new and old.
Yeah, well, I just talked to Charles Gaines recently for this podcast, and, you know, of course, you and I will both know that back then in the 1970s, bodybuilding was a very little-known sport, and really the only publicity it got was in the muscle magazines itself. So what did you think when someone like Charles Gaines and George Butler, who came from the outside world, and I think they were covering that show for Sports Illustrated, what did you think when you met them and you saw that bodybuilding was going to get some mainstream coverage?
Well, obviously, with Arnold there at the time as well, you know, bodybuilding had just had the sort of the public seed planted with Arnold because of his wonderful, exciting, creative, crazy personality that, you know, we'd have somebody that could speak for us and kind of get through to the public who didn't understand us. So, you know, training with Arnold the very first year he came here from Austria, he asked Joe Weider who he wanted to train with, and he said Mike Katz because people knew me, but they didn't know him because he was in Austria in a little town, and I was winning championships like Mr. America. So he wanted to train, you know, with Draper and Ed Corney and myself, since it was hard to train with Franco because when a guy starts off with a 600-pound warm-up squat, it's pretty disheartening when you wish that you could do 600 on your final set. He'd start off with that. So, and he really didn't know, and this is nothing against Franco, actually. It might be, but he never knew what he was going to do. He was one of these instinctual guys that could blow up a hot water bottle and get good from it. So it didn't really matter if he did chest on one day and did chest the next 3 days and then didn't do legs for a month, you know. Had the kind of body that could do anything and he'd get good. Even Arnold and I didn't have that advantage, and most people don't. You know, you've got to be a little more scientific and use common sense rather than just blow up hot water bottles and get 20-inch arms, you know.
What was it like training with Arnold back then when he first came to America?
Well, I like to train legs because I was a football player and an athlete with the Jets. And so legs is the most important part in your quick feet. He didn't particularly like legs, even though he realized he had to do it. It wasn't his favorite part. So I was strong, much stronger in legs, and he was more happy to train biceps. So, you know, we got along good because I needed the biceps, he needed the legs. So, and we were the same size pretty much, you know, 240, 250, 6'1", 6'2", you know, within an inch of each other. So where he was strong, I was weak, and where I was strong, he was weak. So it compatibly really did us both a lot of good.
Mike, let's talk about that 1972 Mr. Universe where you competed in Iraq with Ed Corney. And Gaines and Butler covered that for the book, and I thought that was one of the most interesting parts of the book because it was really fascinating how popular the sport was in Iraq and how you guys were treated over there.
Yeah, I sure would be careful with the name Cats to go any place near where that contest was held. So in those years, I guess being an athlete trumped a Jewish last name, and the people there, as you can see in that double middle fold picture where those little Iraqi kids, they were running around in what we almost would think are pajamas. And that boy had a gleam in his eye and looking up at me in admiration. So, you know, I always treasure that picture. It's kind of interesting. I wonder who he was, and I wonder if he's still alive. And it would be neat, you know, to be able to communicate with him again. Hopefully he is alive. So, with all the turmoil in those countries, you just don't know how many people died in the wars and so forth. But that picture was, you know, you didn't need any explanation. You just look at the picture and you understood what it was all about.
How was the audience out there, Mike? I mean, how was the crowds? I heard it was like really crazy because they really loved bodybuilding in Iraq.
Yeah, I think they like to eat more, though, you know, especially if it was a free meal. I can remember with Ed Corney, we went to a banquet and Ben Weider was there, and the officials from the Iraqi delegation, you know, they honored and wished us all luck. And, you know, there were throngs of people at this banquet. I remember there had to be 100-pound fish on this massive platter, huge. I don't know what species it was, but somehow Ed and I had our backs to the wall, which was a good thing. Because I don't know whether there was a signal or a dinner bell, something signaled that it was time to eat. I swear to God, you know, if we had ever not been with our back against the wall, we would have got trampled. I mean, that 100-pound fish was like piranhas. I mean, you had 1,000 piranhas. There was no food left. In about 15 seconds, Eddie and I fought for our life to get out of there. So, you know, I think they like free food better than bodybuilding, but it might have been a close contest.
Yeah, I thought that was a great part of the book. Another part of the book I never talked to you about when we talked before was Charles Gaines was sort of talking about, I think he was kind of proving that bodybuilders were great athletes. And he talked about the series of physical tests that Dr. Larry Golding from Kent State University did with you. And he said your scores were like in the superior rating. And when he tested you on a bicycle ride test, he said your max workload was like 2,400. It was off the scale, he said.
That was, unfortunately, Kent State, many older people during Vietnam can remember that probably was one of the rallying cries of getting out of the Vietnam War when the National Guard got spooked and they shot three or four students. And there was this famous picture of this girl with her hands to her mouth, and she watched her friend dying with blood trickling down the street. That was an iconic photo, and it was one of the photos that helped end the war. And that's sort of what Kent State was all about, but he was at UNLV as well, Dr. Golding. And, you know, they never had really done any tests on elite bodybuilding people, but being an athlete as well, you know, I had the endurance and lung and heart capacity of a marathon runner, and I was 2% body fat, weighing about 250. So, you know, the tests, when they tried to measure vital capacity, you know, where they actually will dunk you underwater, you have to exhale four or five times, and you're in a leaded belt, and they put you in a tank, and then they dip you under water for a few seconds, you know, to try to test your your body fat levels and so forth. They couldn't do it because my vital capacity in my chest had so much volume that it threw the whole scores off, which was kind of funny. I kind of like that. You know, anytime I could do something that's like one-of-a-kind stuff, it kind of motivates me.
Yeah, I thought that was a great part of the book. So what did you think of the book when it came out, when it came out in 74?
Oh, I was proud of it, right? You know, God almighty.
Yeah.
It's, you know, for me to be representing our sport in such a wonderful, positive, respectful light as it did, you know, I mean, that's why they call it the golden age of bodybuilding, because, you know, the young kids today who are involved in the sport, you know, have got us, and then we had, you know, Clarence Ross and my hero Bill Pearl. We had, you know, Steve Reeves, and that was one of the reasons I started, because of the Hercules movies. You know, and Charles Atlas, you know, getting sand kicked in your face was another reason I started, because I was picked on. So, you know, there were many, many people before us who were really the forerunners, Sigmund Klein, and trying to think of the guy in Pumping Iron who did the backflip, you know, and he had a fig leaf.
Eugene Sandow,
Sandow. You know, those guys were the first guys, and there were probably people in the 1800s who did strongman stuff like bending nails and so forth, you know, bending horseshoes. But, you know, the people I respected was Bill Pearl especially. He's my hero. He's still a good friend of mine. I respected him the most. He didn't even have to pose. He just had to stand there, and to me, his body would win a contest. And Steve Reeves, then Bill Pearl, and then, you know, guys like Chuck Sipes. When I was younger, he was older than me. I remember when I went in my first IFBB contest, I think it was in Brooklyn Academy of Music, Chuck Sipes, I think, won. And I was so impressed with Chuck Sipes. I think I won best chest, but I was maybe third in the Mr. American. It took me 3 years or so of winning best chest. And then it was, you know, Zane won, and then I won after Zane.
Yeah,
and you know, I kept winning, you know, best body parts, and got better and better and better. But you know, I appreciate we were the golden age, but you know, the real golden age has got to go back further than us. We were maybe a different name age. We were the, you know, the media acceptance age, not so much the golden age, because golden age has got to go back to these guys like Klein and the guys back in the 20s and 30s, not in the 60s and 70s. I mean, these guys started, you know, we just had the media attention in a positive way that, and again, with Arnold, nothing probably would have happened without Arnold. You know, who are they going to use? I mean, Frank Zane's a great guy, but he's quiet. Franco is hard to understand. Maybe Dave Draper, but again, he was quiet.
Yeah.
They didn't have a mouthpiece, you know, like a Vince McMahon. They didn't have that kind of a character like Arnold is, who can just grab an audience and mesmerize it. So, we're, you know, everything kind of fell together, all the pieces, and the puzzle got completed. But without Arnold, it wouldn't have happened.
Was Arnold always like that ever since you first met him? Was his personality always basically the same?
Yeah. I, you know, I don't know if he, as an infant, you know, would have stole another baby's bottle. You know, and then he just grew from stealing kids' bottles to stealing their popsicles to knocking them off a bike. You know, the you know, little tricycle, and I'm riding your bike. I don't give a crap. You know, Arnold just had a. You know, I would have liked to have spoke to somebody who knew him as a child. You know, to see what kind of kid he was. You know, probably a pain in the ass like me. Maybe there's something in common when you get an extroverted kid that doesn't know right from wrong or when to stop and when to start. You know, I'm sure Arnold was that way, because you don't create it by going to a college class or elementary school. I mean, this is what you are. You're genetically gifted. And then instead of ending up in prison or on drugs, you end up channeling your life into a positive role that you can utilize your winning, not quitting personality. And, you know, the people lucky enough to be around him, either were going to have some of those traits, or you wouldn't be friends with him. Because if you're a boat anchor of a person, and you're a crybaby, and all the other traits that he has no patience for, you know, he's never going to befriend you, because you're not going to take his energy from anything. I mean, you either, you know, have the energy yourself, and you're going to kind of like be an energized bunny to him,
mm-hmm.
where you're able to motivate him. He's not giving anything back to you, not unless you give something to him, and he's not going to take some negative-minded person. So the people who were not positive like him, he really had nothing to do with. So he understood that those people are going to drag you down and keep you from winning. And he surrounded himself with very positive people, and he was always, I don't know, some Americans might call it cocky. You know, I would say confident, because anything he was cocky or confident about, he could back it up. Some people
yeah.
have big mouths and get nothing done, and then you get some people who, like Joe Namath, who I played with, you know, he says he's winning the Super Bowl against the Baltimore Colts and Johnny Unitas. He says we're winning even though they're 17-point underdogs in Miami, and, you know, Namath comes through and wins the Super Bowl. So, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. And, you know, I'm surrounded, like with Arnold and Joe Namath, I mean, people who are winners. And that can't help but to drag me along and be a winner with them.
Talk about the atmosphere at Gold's Gym back then, too, Mike, because, you know, things are obviously different now. People train all over the country. But back then, there was only one Gold's Gym in Venice, California, and all the champs would come out there to train for the summer because the contests were always in September. So talk about that atmosphere. I know it was such a really small gym, especially when you think about it now. I think it was only less than 4,000 square feet, right?
Yeah, you're right. But, boy, let me tell you, you could have had 100,000 square feet, and you wouldn't have had that atmosphere. Because
right.
if you look at the Rocky movies, you know, Rocky One and then Rocky Two, when he mm-hmm. trained with Mick, you know, Burgess Meredith, and he trained in Rocky One was South Philly, the Italian Market, Yo Rocky, and
yeah.
life was simple, sweaty sweatshirt and running at 4 o'clock in the morning down the street and whatnot,
right.
running through the vegetable market and so forth. Oh, yucky,
yeah.
Rocky. And then he got smart, got to be a smart aleck, and he go to Vegas, you know, and he starts training with a bunch of women around and all these distractions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just watch the first Rocky movie, and you'll know how he trained. And then when Rocky got beat or something, then he went to Watts. He went into, whether it was Rocky 2 or 3, he went to the poorest section of L.A., you know,
yeah.
where he had the race riots, and he got back to basics again. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's not so much... you know, anything fancy, you know, you could have, I trained in a home gym. I trained in a 3-car garage in a
yeah,
blue collar neighborhood. And that's about as rocky as you can get. And I had an old man who was named Thor. He was a Viking guy from Norway.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. It was Harald Helland, one of my idols. I mean,
wow.
you know, I wouldn't have made it without him and his son, Marty. So I'm going to give a
wow.
shout out, you know, Coach Helland has passed away, but Marty's out mm-hmm. there. I hope someday you can send this back to me and he can listen to me giving him the accolades he deserves, because
absolutely.
That was
yeah.
training. And Arnold Schwarzenegger and Franco, before they went to Europe for Mr. Olympia, which was in Graz that year, I don't know what the year was, 80 or whatever, 82, 81, he went to that garage before he went to Europe out of Kennedy Airport. He said it was the best
mm-hmm.
workout he ever got.
Really?
So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. So really, Gold's Gym then was a larger version of Coach Helland's gym, Garage Gym in East Haven. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I could develop the kind of body, I have nothing but admiration for athletes today. A lot of old guys say, you know, back in the day when I was a kid, this and that, you know. Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm not. First of all, like I said to my granddaughter, I said, make sure when they lay me out and I'm dead, I want the funeral home to put a smile on my face, because I got nothing to be sad about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got things to be sad about, but it's not going to be when the final breath is taken. I'm complete. You know, I'm not ready to go, but
yeah.
you know what? I'm not going to be pissed off about, you know, kicking the bucket. And, you know, I've accomplished what I want in life, and now everything is gravy. Everything is frosting on the cake from what I've been able
yeah.
to achieve.
When you were training with Coach in the garage, that was in Pumping Iron, right, when they showed you guys training before?
Yeah,
you
that was in Pumping
building.
Iron. Yeah, I had the T-shirt
yeah.
with a hole in it.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
T-shirt, when I said to Waller, where's my T-shirt, that was my lucky T-shirt. I still have
the
T-shirt.
Oh, that was the one? Okay.
When I said, did anybody see my T-shirt? That shirt in Pumping Iron with the hole in it, which was
mm-hmm.
thread barren, it was a tank top. and I was doing standing presses, and the coach was right next to me. One day that's going to go on eBay or on Letgo.
Right.
Because I have a feeling that's going to be worth more than $5 or $10.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The one and only. I'm not saying I'm Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig, but that's like a uniform or a bat if you're a baseball fan. There's only one Mike Katz Pumping Iron authentic T-shirt. I didn't have them reproduced.
Right,
and I still got that one tucked away.
So how did you feel about the movie Pumping Iron? Because they made you a really big part of that, Mike. I think you were, I mean, if you're going to say there were stars in the movie, of course there would be Arnold and Louis, but you were definitely right up there.
Here's the deal with the movie. I never, this is, and whether this has ever been exposed or written about, I was never supposed to have the part I had. And a matter of fact, I was supposed to be a minor character, just another guy. They tried to trick me in South Africa. This took a while to find out, but this is authentic from the horse's mouth here. Big Mike is talking. So when I went to South Africa, I looked at Danny Padilla or Padilla, and I'm saying, you know, we got me, Waller, and Ed Corney. You only can have three. So why is Padilla, Danny Padilla, why is he on the plane?
Yeah.
So, you know, why? They're not going to waste $8,000 on a freaking ticket for him. So the secret plan that I never knew, was they were going to try to get Padilla to be in the short class or the middleweight, whatever it was. Padilla was the fourth guy, and you only could have three per country. And it didn't matter if you had three heavyweights or three middleweights. You could have three, but you only could have three. So I know Robbie wasn't in the show. But there was four guys on the plane, me, Waller, and Ed Corney. Padilla's there. I'm saying, why is he there? So I get to South Africa, and I'm told that Waller and I have to pose off up in Waller's room or my room. We got to go up there and come out with one of us is going to be in the show and one of us isn't.
Okay.
So I do a little posing. Waller does a little posing. You know, he wasn't bulky. He was in good shape. I was in good shape. I went 8,000 miles, whatever, round trip to compete, and I'm not leaving the show, and neither was Waller. So begrudgingly, they couldn't make either of us because, as a matter of fact, the Association of Bodybuilding in South African, you had to have the names of the competitors in 3 months before the show. Padilla's name was never in. Now, could Ben Weider have pulled the strings? If I said to Waller, I guess you're better than me. And if I thought he was better, I would have said it. I mean, I have no problem. Arnold's better than me. And Ferrigno in his best shape is better than me. But if Ferrigno's not better than me when he's not in shape. And he beat me once when they went to Italy. And that's wrong. Matter of fact, Arnold said in Sports Illustrated that, you know, if it was 2 weeks later, you know, that Lou Ferrigno would have been better than Mike Katz. Well, guess what? I was better than Ferrigno that day. It's not my fault he came in bulky. And all of a sudden, he goes, that was Italy, probably 74. Maybe it was, I think, the year before South Africa. You can look at it because I didn't go to Italy. Ferrigno did. And there was a pose-off between me and Ferrigno at a show in California. A month
out of Mr. International, right, Mike?
Right. He beats me. Because Arnold wanted, you know, to compete against Louis. Arnold didn't want to compete against me as a top guy. I mean, a long story short, because the audience there listening should know, because it's historical. Waller and I both do not fall for the trap. Padilla is not able to go in. Ed Jubenville, God rest his soul, and Tommy Minicello were the American ambassadors to the show. And they didn't fall for it. And after they would not sucker me into dropping out, Weider stopped doing business with Ed Jubenville's equipment company over that because Jubenville says, I'm not going to screw my friend Mike Katz because you're asking me to take him out so they could make the movie and have Mike Katz go in the Olympia. See, they wanted me in the Olympia so Arnold could beat me too. All the footage that they had of me, they had so much good footage that when they went to editing the film and I didn't fall for going in the Olympia, they had to use the part with me and Waller. So, you know, God be happy for me that I became nationally, internationally known because I wouldn't stand for being pushed around in South Africa neither did Waller get pushed around. Padilla came out on the losing end. He didn't compete because there was no place for him to compete unless he could have become a citizen of Iraq or something overnight.
And,
and, you know, in the footage that they had filmed in the garage and up at Mountain Park, where we first guest posed that day with me and Arnold and so forth, they had so much footage, you know, with me asking, I wonder what my wife's doing. I wonder how the kids are acting. And I got to go shake his hand. And he saw my T-shirt, all the memorable parts. They couldn't leave it out. So they just had to make the first third of the movie. And I'm sure that pissed Arnold off. I mean, Arnold wanted to have the whole movie because that was his ticket to Hollywood. So now he's got to share it with me, of all people, even though to this day we're very good friends. We really like each other, and I would do anything for him. You know, I want to shout out something to Arnold. I hope that somehow you can get this to Arnold because I haven't been able through his secretaries at Oak Productions in Santa Monica. But if Arnold's listening or anybody knows Arnold that listens to this, he's got a great chance to be a director or producer or both of a movie that I've got perfectly done because Clint Eastwood does it. If Clint Eastwood can do it, then Arnold can do it. And the movie is about a guy named Smokey Yunick, Y-U-N-I-C-K. Smokey Yunick, in reference to crew chiefs in automobile racing, Indianapolis and NASCAR. Smokey Yunick, who has since passed away, was one of the most incredible personalities in the history of auto racing. If you read his books, if you ever heard him, if you went online and went to Smokey Yunick when he was voted into the Hall of Fame, the Indianapolis Hall of Fame, and you listened to his speech, he had a cowboy hat on, he had glasses on, and he spoke his mind, more so than even Arnold. And I want Jeff Bridges to star from 50 to 80, because he died in his 80s, but Jeff Bridges would pull that character off. So, Arnold, call me back. Let's get Smokey Yunick, a movie called Smokey. Let's get Jeff Bridges in the part of it when he's between 50 and 80 years old because it's the perfect part.
So that'd be great.
Just a shout-out there. Yeah.
All right. Hopefully Arnold will hear it.
I hope you can send this thing. You know, if you can, send that clip. You do me a big favor, John. Send that if you can, to Oak Productions. It's in Santa Monica. And his secretary will get him that interview.
Mike, speaking of Jeff Bridges, I wanted to talk a little bit about Stay Hungry, too, because weren't you one of the bodybuilders to...
Running through the streets and crashing roofs of cars. I don't know how many thousands of dollars. They let us loose in Birmingham at rush hour on a Friday in our posing trunks. And you saw Leon Brown on the top of a bus going down Main Street in Birmingham. Because what had happened is the story with, you know, it was not even a B movie. It was probably a D movie. The only real reason for the movie was Sally Field. It was her first movie outside of The Flying Nun. So it was going to be her breakout to get away from The Flying Nun television show with a habit. And she'd twitch the habit and she'd fly around like a freaking angel. So she was in the film and Jeff Bridges was in an Arnold. And Arnold needed, they were holding a crooked bodybuilding show, and the promoter didn't pay the bodybuilders, and we were running all over trying to get the producer of the bodybuilding show and get our money. But needless to say, you know, you let 20, you know, bodybuilders loose at rush hour. You know, today we'd get shot. You know, it's a good thing it wasn't today because some of us would be murdered.
Did they have that set up with the city, Mike, or did they just let you guys run?
Yeah, no, they had it set up because the bus was obviously, you know, they had to get the guys up on a bus. Yeah, the city knew what was going on, but they didn't know how much havoc we would wreak by, you know, going on roofs of cars, doing a broad jump and caving roofs in. I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars a poor film company had to pay to fix people's cars, but... That was fun. I really enjoyed that. That was like a football game.
How long were you guys out there, Mike?
I think we were out there 12 days. And the problem with the 12 days is we had to work out at like 3 o'clock in the morning because you were on a movie set and you didn't know when they were going to need you for 2 minutes. You're hanging around a freaking movie set waiting as an extra to be called day after day after day. They piled us in a bus, brought us to a gym. If we got any training in, it was 2 a.m. when they stopped filming. So, wow. You know, at that point, we all loved Arnold, but it was kind of a pain in the ass, even though, you know, I don't know if he gave us $500 or whatever at the time. It was worth the money, but yeah. None of us wanted to be away from training, you know, or our families for 10 days waiting for 2 minutes on screen.
You guys were all training for contests too, right? Most of
yeah, it was right before, I think, some fairly big show. So
yeah, one of the guys we interviewed for this podcast was Roger Callard, and he said that you guys were roommates when you were down there.
Yeah, he's a great guy, wonderful person.
Yeah, he said hi.
Yeah, and it was Denny Gable and Robbie Robinson, I think Padilla, Franco, of course. There was a whole bunch of well-known people. I think a Keen guy named, I think Cam, I'm trying to think of his first name, K-E-A-N-E, blonde-haired guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, everybody there, even Waller, they were all good people, because if not, we would have had fights in the gym. And, you know, Joe Gold was not going to let the fights go on. So, and again, Waller was put up to doing what he did. I mean, he didn't. I mean, Waller's the kind of a guy that if he could have been creative enough, he would have done it without help. So he gladly was absolutely happy to do what he did, but he didn't make that up. They made that up. Matter of fact, what was interesting is when they filmed the football field with Callard and Robbie and Waller throwing the football in the football stadium, that was 6 months after the movie. But they edited in that it was 3 months before the contest, and this is what he was going to do, when in fact that scene was filmed after the show to make it blend in when they edited it. So another little tidbit of information for the moviegoers.
Yeah, well, I think looking back at Pumping Iron now, 40 years later, I think one of the things that people love about it so much, even the young guys today who weren't around back in those days and may not be aware of all those bodybuilders, I think one of the things that's really attractive about that movie is the sense of fun that you guys all had and the camaraderie. I mean, I think you could see it even like after the contest is over, or all that, when Arnold's smoking the joint and you're eating the birthday cake. I think it was Lou Ferrigno and Ed Corney's birthday, right?
Yeah. Louis says, I just want to eat my cake.
Right.
And then he's in the back of the bus.
Yeah.
One of them is Louis taking his coat off in the back of the bus at the very end of the film. And then Arnold kind of turns away like he's going to get sucker shot it in the head when Ferrigno's taking his coat off. Then Arnold gets up in the seat, he starts taking his coat off, and then he wants to go out with Louis' sister because they can make apple strudel. And I mean, you know, it's Arnold. I mean, Arnold is. It wouldn't be any movie. It wouldn't be a book. I mean, because like, who was going to do it? Sergio Oliva? I don't think so. And I look at other personalities. You would have had to have me on a lot of medication to make me real happy, you know, and I couldn't have pulled it off because he didn't need to be medicated to be a fun guy. I mean, he just was fun.
That's just how he was,
to be around, and he really brought out the best in everybody. And I'm, you know, again, I'm giving him his dues. I'm not trying to get in his next movie. I mean, you know, I'm just being honest. So,
well, Mike, I thought your part in the movie, too, was great, because I think a lot of regular people out there could relate to your struggles, you know, when you were a kid and they called you Four Eyes and all that stuff, and then you became a champion and you wouldn't give up. You were talking about how you would go into Mr. Universe time and time again to just win it, and you didn't care how long it would take. And I think the average person who didn't know anything about bodybuilding who saw that movie, I think they could really relate to your story, and I think that's why your part of the movie was so popular.
Well, I appreciate that. I was the only one at the time that had a family and a real profession as a teacher. And not that it made me better than anybody. It just, I was coming from it from a different, you know, I didn't live for just bodybuilding. I was a football player. I was an athlete, a four-star athlete in high school. I was All-American in college. I played with the Jets, so You know, I'm a fanatical car enthusiast, more interested in cars at times than bodybuilding. I wanted to tell the veterans something I've been doing for 5 years. And when Vietnam occurred back in the 70s, I was drafted by the Army, and I was playing football with the Jets, and I had to make a decision as to whether I was going to teach school and possibly get a deferment, continue to try to play with the Jets, get a medical deferment,
because I had an operation. I wasn't burning my draft card, and I wasn't going to Canada like some kids did. But, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up wanting to be a health education teacher, just like my hero, who was named Mr. Gerosa, was my seventh grade health teacher. I wanted to be like him because he helped make a man out of me. He was a Marine. So I end up having one of my best friends, Eddie Duhl, who was a great pitcher. He might have been good enough to go into major leagues. He's 19 or 20. He decides, you know, at the time he's going to go into the Army. Goes in and dies 2 weeks after his boots hit the ground in Vietnam. He was blown apart by a landmine. He came back in a body bag. He had, I don't know if it was an open casket, maybe not. And, you know, the 21-gun salute, the flag draped coffin. They folded the flag, gave it to his mother and father, who were never the same again. And I'm sure anybody out there who lost a child in a war would feel the same way, that your life just isn't the same. It's been broken by war. So I said to myself when I was in my early 20s, I said, you know, someday I'm going to do something that's going to be a tribute to the military and to my friend Eddie Duhl. So I've always been an aviation, World War II aviation fighter pilot, historical guy. I've loved cars and planes. So that, like, if you go online and you want to know the most famous living World War II fighter pilot, he flew a P-51 Mustang. His name was Bud Anderson, Colonel Clarence E. Bud Anderson. And he flew a plane called the Old Crow, P-51 Mustang. And the Old Crow is English whiskey. And they did everything they could to unwind after their flights over France and Germany. And he loved Old Crow whiskey, and he named his plane Old Crow. If you go online to Bud Anderson, Old Crow, P-51 Mustang, you'll see his plane. So I said to myself, I'm going to put together a car that's going to be a tribute to the plane. And the car is going to be unveiled within the next 3 months, either in California or in Hartford, Connecticut, at a Warbird World War II museum. Bud Anderson's 95, and I tell him to just keep breathing because the car is almost finished. And the car is a 32 Ford. It's a 32 Ford. It's a three-window chopped hot rod. The frame had to be extended 8 inches, the 32 Ford frame, because it's got an aircraft engine. It's a 12-cylinder, 2,000-horsepower V12 aircraft engine in the car. I've got all the gauges. It's a single-seat fighter seat from a P-51. It's got 17 P-51 gauges in it. The taillights are the wing lights of the plane. The rudder pedals are the gas and the brakes. It's got a stick that they flew the ailerons with. That's the automatic transmission. It's painted. It was just finished. The airbrushing was just finished by the guy who did the Pumping Iron tribute car. So if you went online to Mike Katz's Pumping Iron tribute car and you saw Arnold unveiling the car with Franco Colombo, the same guy who airbrushed the scenes from Pumping Iron, airbrushed the P-51 Mustang. So it looks more like a plane than a car. And that's going to be unveiled. That's my tribute to all the veterans of all the wars.
Wow.
And that's going to make me have a smile on my face when I'm dead. So,
where are you going to do this at, Mike? Where are you going to unveil it?
It'll either go to Sacramento, where Bud Anderson lives, or I'm going to first class fly him to the Bradley New England Air Museum. It's a Warbird Museum in Hartford at Bradley International. So he's going to be in one of those places, or wherever he wants me to send the car and get it unveiled, but it won't be a Smithsonian Institute car, but I guarantee that, you know, people who make these little cars for kids, you know, these little models, I'm trying to think of the name of the company that makes these wild little cars that kids collect. I think eventually it'll be one of those, that company will take a look at what I've done and they'll be freaked out over it.
Wow, that sounds
so
fantastic.
That's where I'm at right now, and the car's maybe another month from completion.
Wow, he's going to be overjoyed to see that. He's 95 now, huh?
Yeah, he's seen it all along. He started really crying, you know, and his son did too.
Really?
When they saw because I could, you know, I talked to them 5 years ago about doing it, and I said, you know, I need your permission. He says, you know what, go for it. But they had no idea. I mean, you know, you're talking about $300,000, this project. maybe more than that. You know, the engine alone was 100,000 in the car. So, you know, most people can buy three cars, four cars for 100 grand. That's just what the engine costs. So I spared absolutely no expense in building this because this is going to put a smile on my face when I'm dead. And I know it's also being dedicated not only to him, because it's his plane, the Old Crow. Matter of fact, Jack Roush from Roush Mustang, he's like Carroll Shelby. Jack Roush is an avid pilot. He has a P-51 Mustang that's painted Old Crow in tribute to Bud Anderson. That's how much respect Bud Anderson has for aviation people. So I'm trying to do it automotively, and I know I've done a good job because the few people who have seen these photos, they're just, it's breathtaking. I mean, the car actually looks, if it had wings, that it could fly. It's painted exactly the same as a plane. So I'm really excited about it, very passionate about it. So I hope that the listeners can go online and respect Bud Anderson. Just go on Bud Anderson P-51 Mustang, and you'll see the guy that I'm. There's a famous portrait, not portrait, it's a famous photo of Bud Anderson kneeling on the wing of a P-51 Mustang with his leather flight jacket on. That's going to be airbrushed on the trunk of the P-51 car. And that's what I did in the Pumping Iron car. It was like Mount Rushmore. I did myself, Arnold, Ferrigno, and Franco. The four of us are airbrushed on the back of my 32 Ford Pumping Iron tribute car. So the same guy is going to airbrush. And he'll do it photo perfect, almost that it doesn't even look like it was airbrushed. And this is not a vinyl wrap car. If I had to do a vinyl wrap car, nothing against it, but this isn't a pizza truck. I mean, this is an artistic expression, and they never would have used vinyl because they didn't have it to vinyl wrap a plane. This is an actual airbrush artist that hand did the, took 5 or 6 days to do the car. And it's, you know, I know it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Go out there and start looking for that car because it'll be a famous car, like the much more famous than Pumping Iron because the military is different. I mean, Pumping Iron's lifted weights, big deal. I mean, these are veterans. Mm-hmm. These are guys that died, the greatest generation of World War II people. They died, so we're not speaking German right now. Right. So I have a lot of respect for veterans.
Right. And I remember the Pumping Iron car you did because I remember last time we did our interview, you talked about that, and I went online and found the footage of that.
Yeah, I mean, all the most famous film clips from Pumping Iron are airbrushed on that car.
Yeah, that looked great.
Arnold said he was either going to be on half of those airbrushed photos or he was going to find a way to terminate the car. So I reluctantly put Arnold on at least half of the film slides on the car because I didn't want to terminate it. That's another story for another day.
Arnold hasn't changed.
Yeah, no. No, he actually, I think his girlfriend says he gets worse, but I don't see it. She didn't know him in his day because I started talking about a little bit of his youth and Arnold, you know, gave me a cutthroat sign to stop because he didn't need his girlfriend to know the way he was. I'm sure she figured it out though.
Right. All right, Mike. Well, thanks again for joining us for this interview. And, you know, I appreciate the interview you gave us a couple of years ago. That was a great interview. And I'm glad you were able to join us again to talk about Pumping Iron.
Thanks, John.
You were a huge part of that 1970s bodybuilding scene, and you're a huge part of the movie and the book, and I'm glad we got your input on the whole thing, and thanks again for all the impact you made in the sport of bodybuilding.
Hope that a lot of listeners are able to, you know, maybe get in touch with me or tell me that they listened to it and enjoyed it, and it obviously came from my heart, like it always does.
What's the best way to get in touch with you, Mike? Are you on social media at all, or do you have a...
You know, they can go on social media. My son helps me with it. You know, again, I'm pretty good, but they go on the Mike Katz website. You know, my son kind of works the website for me, and the very important things that go through, he makes sure that I respond to them.
All right. Well, that message will get across, and hopefully a lot of the fans will reach out to you. I know you still have a lot of fans out there from the movie and from those days in bodybuilding.
Be well, John. Have a nice summer, and thanks for your opportunity to speak with you again.
All right, we really appreciate it, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
Be well. Thanks.
All right, take care.
All right, thanks to Mike Katz again for joining us for his interview talking about the movie Pumping Iron. I want to thank Redcon One, Old School Labs, Florida Alternative Medicine, and Six Pack Bags for sponsoring our show again. So join us next week for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Take care, everybody.